Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
All right, guys, welcome to the Rick Shields Golf Show podcast, everybody. I'm your host, Rick Shields. I'm here with co-host Guy. This episode, 118, is a special episode, hence the Friday release. We've just interviewed one of the highest ranked golfers in the entire world. He's currently fourth in the world.
He's world number... Well, there's two things. When we're sat in this formation, you know it's a big podcast. There's only been, I think, Bryson and now Victor, where we're sat at this for the start. But yeah, we've had on Victor, who was absolutely phenomenal.
So Victor Hovland from Norway. He's young, but he's so bloody switched on.
7 years younger than me, and I felt like he was the grown-up.
He's the grown-up talking.
Yeah.
He's won six times, which that's an staggering outrageous amount of wins. He won the US Amateur back in 2019. He's played in the Masters. He won the best amateur when Tiger won the Masters back in 2019.
I must admit, I didn't actually... I knew he'd won the US Amateur, but I didn't realise... And sorry, I knew he'd played in the Masters, but I didn't realise he played the Masters the same year that Tiger won it until actually... I thought it was 2018 for some reason. Imagine that.
So Victor Hovland, unbelievable character. Now, this is done remotely, which we'll see. We've got a slightly new setup, which we've trialled today. Fingers crossed it's all worked. This is a little bit of an apology from last episode because it didn't go perfectly, but we did our best. It's remote, so his audio is not perfect, but just bear that in mind. And there might just be a couple of times where his Wi-Fi slightly cut out and we lost him a tiny bit. So if you hear a couple of dropouts, listen, it's part and parcel of it. But if things like this work, we can do more interviews. You've seen the one with Bryson, this one now with Victor. We can get some of the biggest names in golf. So bear with it. I think you're going to really enjoy it. Sit back, make sure right now, and we don't often do this, make sure you like, follow, and subscribe to the podcast. You do not want to miss a single episode. Because I'm not being slightly big-headed, a little bit.
Can't be big-headed.
This bloody podcast is just getting better and better.
What I like about it is, we didn't even mention we were having Victor on. It was just like, normal podcast on Tuesday, Friday comes, bam, world number four on the podcast. So who's it going to be next time? It's only going to go, but maybe worse, actually, isn't it, in world ranking? Doesn't matter, it'll still be good.
And I slid into the DMs this time to get this one arranged.
So I've got to go sliding back.
So it's 1-0. Guys, enjoy, sit back, relax, and listen to Victor Hovland, the fourth best player in the world, definitely a future major champion, and definitely will become a Ryder Cup legend.
By the way, I'm not called Geist anymore. It's going to be, what can it be for Geiter?
Guy Charland.
That's it.
Victor Hovland, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. You are now, this is crazy, fourth best player in the world. How does that feel?
Yeah, it's pretty wild. I was third 2 weeks ago, so I guess I should be feeling disappointed now. it fluctuates a lot, obviously, but just the fact to think about a couple of months ago, a couple of years ago, and then 5 years ago, I was so far away, and now we're, kind of here and trying to win tournaments and climb the world ranking.
Well, you're doing that pretty well at the moment. I mean, is it three wins in your last six starts?
It might be last seven, I think.
I mean,
but I have played some good golf, that's for sure.
It's not bad at all. I mean, I don't want to take all credit for this, but last time you briefly came on the podcast, I think you just crept into ninth in the world. And listen, I don't want to take all credit for it, but now you're obviously fourth and was high as third. What's realistically now, run just started 2022. What is the ambition for this year? Where can you honestly say your world ranking is going to be at the end of this year?
I don't think too much about my world ranking, to be honest. It's a boring answer, but it's more about just trying to get better every day. As I said, I was number three 2 weeks ago, and that was insane. And after I won, after I played in Abu Dhabi a couple of weeks ago, I got to number fifth. And it's just if you focus too much on the ranking from a week-to-week basis, it's going to take you up and down too much, instead of if you focus on just your skill set and make sure that everything is in order. You're probably going to play well at the next event, and that's kind of what you need to take care of.
You let your golf do the talking.
Yep.
Well, that's a good way of doing it. We're going to kick things off. We normally do quick fire questions. We normally do nine of them, but sometimes it's not so quick fire. So we've shortened it down to seven.
Yeah, that's the thing. Firstly, Victor, as Rick said, we're honored to have you on the podcast. We've had some amazing guests recently in Tommy Fleetwood and Bryson and now yourself. So I think the caliber of golfers is just getting better and better. So again, thanks so much for joining us. We have got some questions off our listeners as well. We didn't tell them you were coming on until about 5 minutes ago, and we've done a post on Facebook. And already the questions are coming in thick and fast, so we're looking forward to those in the end. But yeah, as Rick said, we've got some either-or questions, but if you want to elaborate on them, please feel free. So number one, nine holes or the driving range?
Nine holes. I get bored pretty easily on the driving range if I'm just kind of hitting shots without any goals. So for me, it's way better to just go and play nine holes, drop a few balls, and try to hit a cut into that green, hit a draw into that green, hit it low, hit it high. You know, you kind of mess around a little bit.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Bryson was the opposite, wasn't he? He said he's very much hitting balls, which for me, it's boring for us because I don't stripe it every time. If I hit it out the middle, I might enjoy hitting balls more, but definitely get on the golf course. Number two.
I played with him just at the restart again, and he said he hardly played golf over the COVID shutdown. In the States, I mean, he was just beating balls on the range. It's pretty incredible how he can come back and be that sharp.
Yeah, you think it would take a while to kind of knock off the rust.
Yeah,
certainly around like the short game and stuff. But it's one of those things where I think once you've got it, as you guys all have, it doesn't take a lot to fine tune it, does it? Really? You'd like to think.
Okay, Netflix or YouTube?
YouTube.
Good
sure.
answer.
I like watching shows, but I don't do that on a daily basis. Now YouTube is a daily occurrence, so I'm gonna have to stand with YouTube on that one.
And are you still into your heavy metal on YouTube?
Well, that's where I started to find my metal music, but now I kind of know what albums are coming out certain dates. I know when to check Spotify and stuff like that. But I find some stuff through YouTube, so it serves me well.
Nice.
Tiger or Jack?
Tiger. It's not much else to say.
Done. Yep. End of conversation.
Driving or putting?
Driving, I would say.
Is that because you prefer it more, or you're better at it, or you find it more exciting?
Yeah, it's one of my strengths in my game, and as we've all heard through recent years, it's becoming more and more important. Driver, show, putt, or doe has always just been the same, but now there's more truth to maybe the opposite way. So I think it's just a good thing to be good at. If you can hit a little bit further, if you can hit it somewhat straight, you know, you're gonna be pretty set up for some good scores over the course of a season.
Absolutely.
Do you think, obviously, that's really become so much more kind of accepted, hasn't it, in the golf world the last, like you said, 4 or 5 years, that how important hitting it a long way actually is. There's obviously a lot of young guys now like yourself doing so, so well, who hit the golf ball a long way as well. Do you think that kind of helped you, that you were kind of more in your amateur days and understood the importance of kind of gain and distance and hitting it a long way?
Yeah, I think when I was a kid, it was starting to become popular, you know, trying to hit it further and swing it faster. But I wish I started even earlier and put even more emphasis on it when I was younger, because I felt like I kind of got my back end of my junior career kind of starting to get into it. Whereas if I would have started earlier, I would have had some more speed even where I am now. Just really the last couple of years, 2-3 years, that's really what I've been trying to swing it faster. And I think that's what you're seeing with a lot of the guys on tour. They're just now starting to swing it faster. Mm. Whereas I think the next generation, they're, you know, 10, 11, 12, 13 years old, and they're already trying to swing for the fences. So I think that's going to be a difference when you see those kids get on tour maybe 10 years from now. It's going to be a little different.
It is quite interesting hearing you though say about those kids, Victor, because I think to most people at the moment, you're still in that category. You're still in that category. Do you think what we'll see in the next 10 years, do you think we'll see like huge average increase in club head speeds, huge differences in ball speeds in the next 10 years with these new lads coming up?
I wouldn't say huge, because I think we're at a point where guys are already hitting it pretty far. And, you know, Bryson's reaching 200 miles an hour ball speeds out there. Obviously, there's a difference from, you know, kind of 180 miles an hour ball speed being a long hitter, and then maybe you'll see more guys in the 190s. But I think just the average is going to come up. I don't think you're going to see more outrageous ball speeds than, you know, 200 miles an hour in the tournament. In a turnaround, but there's also some, I don't know, the longer you hit it, yes, it's going to gain you an advantage, but it's also other things becomes harder. So there might be a diminishing return there to where, I don't know, there is a sweet spot for ball speed and how far you hit it. But at the same time, you can be really, really precise with your wedges and short irons without, you know, having to worry about overspinning some shots or underspinning some shots. So I think there's a sweet spot there.
Yeah, good answer.
First app you open in the morning?
Let me check. I need to watch my phone.
Where's the phone worn out?
It'll probably be my text messages, I would say.
Yeah.
Even though they aren't as fun as some of the other apps, but I would say that's the first one.
Okay, this year, hopefully you will win again. Obviously, I'm sure you will, and hopefully you win a major. But if this year you were to win one major and it was either the Open or the Masters, which are you picking?
Wow, that's a good one. Obviously, St. Andrews this year in the Open, it's going to be unreal. But at the same time, Masters is pretty incredible. I played my first major at the Masters and had a really cool experience being the low end with Tiger there. And it was that was pretty incredible. I don't know if I can really pick between the two, but I think because the Open's at St. Andrews, I'm going to have to pick the Open. But I will take either or.
Absolutely.
You know, with that, though, obviously, whenever you achieve anything, it feels amazing, and then you always end up thinking about what's next. But surely when you won low amateur at the Masters, the year that Tiger Woods won, that must have felt like you have kind of made it to some degree. Like, you must have been so happy with that achievement.
Yeah, no, it was a lot of fun, and I thought it was awesome. But it was more like I was a part of something way bigger than my own kind of achievement. You know, I finished 32nd at the Masters. Yeah, it was really good for me as an amateur, but you know, there's been other amateurs that have done better than me in the Masters, and you know, 32nd places now aren't something we kind of remember too much. But it was more just kind of knowing, like, I'm sitting in Butler's cabin with Tiger, hearing Jim Nance announce in the corner. It was more just, wow, this is, I'm actually a part of history right now as, like, I'm living through it in real time. And you kind of just have to pinch yourself and think, wow, this is pretty ridiculous.
I mean, that must be the year that Tiger kind of came back and won as well. And you're there sat in the Butler's cabin, like seeing it all happen in front of you. Like you saw the green jacket being passed over, you saw him putting it on. I mean, that is just incredible. But what's mad, that's only 2019 and you were still an amateur then. Like in a ridiculously short period of time, you must have achieved on your expectation levels in these first few years on tour, surely.
Oh yeah, it's pretty wild to think about. Now I knew that I wasn't even sure I was going to turn pro, kind of that last year in school. And I played my first few PJ Tour events. I played in Mike Coven, I played the Farmers, and I missed a cut in both of those, not by a lot, but. I missed two cuts there, and then I played Bay Hill. I made the cut there without my best game at all. And then I played the Masters and made a cut there and didn't really feel like I played that well. So that's kind of when, you know, I became a lot more confident and comfortable the next time around at the U.S. Open when I played against the best in the world. And I didn't feel out of place as much as I did the first few times, and just that confidence I think is maybe half the battle for a lot of these college kids or guys that are not fully established yet. You know, you kind of need your first few events to find your ground, and I would say I was lucky enough to play these events as an amateur, so I didn't have to use, you know, exemptions as a pro or kind of learn further down the road. I kind of got that experience right away, and that gave me a lot of confidence going into my professional career, thinking, okay, I can actually do this. But fast forward to everything that's gone on to this point, I would say it's still been a very crazy journey. I mean, winning six times worldwide and
outrageous.
Climbing in the world ranking. It's been, it's been ridiculous, but it's been a lot of fun.
And there's been some of great amateurs around that area, yourself and Colin and Matt Wolf, who kind
say,
of, there's
did
been
that,
a,
did
a
that
handful
help
of.
You almost? Like, did it help having, coming up with, I mean, did you play much college golf with Colin Morikawa and Matt Wolf? Like, you all kind of turned pro at a similar time. Did that help you collectively? Were you talking to each other about it? Were you learning from each other's experiences? Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, I think we're, I don't know if there's a saying or something, but I felt like when we first turned pro at Travelers, we all kind of look like three lost ducks a little bit. We're just kind of looking at each other. Okay, what are we going to do? Are we going to play well? Or, you know, do we think we can win? And then we just show up and we played well. And I guess, okay, Colin played sweet. I guess I can play sweet here as well. And you kind of go from there. And obviously they got their wins really, really quickly. Just watching Matt win, and then Colin won not long after. And I've been on tour, or that wasn't even a season for me on the tour. I was just playing on exemptions, and I almost got the impression, well, damn, I kind of have to win soon. I didn't let it like kind of make me, or I didn't let it kind of add pressure on me. I just kind of saw it as motivation, and so I thought it was really cool what those guys were doing. And I knew that if I just kind of kept believing in myself and working on good things, I was hopeful that I could lift the trophy as well.
Amazing. I think there is a saying that could cover this, what you mentioned there. It's almost like rising tides rise together.
Very
and
nice.
I think with the three of you all pushing on in your own individual ways in a weird way, but collaboratively, because you've all kind of grown up and you've all turned pro at the same time, it probably did just kind of spur you all on a little bit. And obviously since that, you've all gone on to be incredible golfers and climbed the world ranking and major winners unbelievable.
This one isn't a quick fire question, but just off the back of talking about majors, obviously, you know, as a professional golfer, as an elite athlete, you kind of imagine that you want to go into each tournament kind of quite level-headed and just kind of calm. But equally, we know that at the majors, there's the strongest field and there's kind of the most to play for. Does it feel different when, I mean, certainly with the Open this year and the Masters, I guess, every year, but does it feel different when you rock up on the Monday or whatever it might be? Is there a different feeling kind of in the air when it's a major?
Yeah, no, for sure. I definitely say there is a different feel. It's a little bit weird, though, because it's a little intangible. It's hard to put your words exactly on what's different. But as you alluded to, you kind of feel it in the air a little bit. It's a little, maybe a little quieter on the Monday and like the first couple of days. And then when you start to see kind of everything come together and more people and the practice rounds start taking 3.5 hours aside, you kind of let everything sink in. Again, I haven't played too many majors. I've yet to kind of get a huge amount of success in one. I've played some good golf in some of them, but I feel like my short game has kind of held me back a little bit at some of the venues. But for my preparations, I try not to think about it too much. It's I almost try to take my emotions out of the event, in a sense that you just focus on each shot and you try to go through your preparations and try to hit the best shot that you can hit every single time. And then you just add it up together instead of thinking, oh, cool, this is Augusta, left in the trees there is not good and this is so hard or whatever kind of thoughts your mind is thinking. Even though you should enjoy the moment and you should have a good time out there, but it's more thinking about just the golf processes instead of, oh, wow, this is the Masters, this is the green jacket, or this is the color jug, and I need to make this putt to have a chance, or, you know, you kind of, your mind start to wander a little bit, so just try to focus on the golf.
And the last question, do you want to follow on from that?
No, go on. I've got some more follow-up
questions. We've got a lot. But the last kind of question was then, you get your, because don't you, when you're on the PGA Tour, before your round, you get like a text with your tee time and who you're playing with. So when you get that text, would you, if you could pick between like people who you're actually friendly with, who you just, you know, you're going to have a great laugh with and maybe chat to, or would you almost rather be playing with guys that are good to play with? So I'm guessing there's guys out there who you might not be particularly friendly with or pally with, or you're obviously more than happy to play with them, but to actually play with, they're very good, maybe they're quite quick or whatever it is. What kind of makes you feel most relaxed on the course? Is it kind of friends or just people who are just good to play with, or both?
Yeah, it's actually funny you say that, because I've noticed a little bit, I don't like to, if I'm in contention, it's kind of weird. I don't know if it's good or bad, but usually the first two rounds, I'm a lot more talkative in a tournament just because, you know, it's the first couple of rounds and I'm just trying to feel loose and try to play my game. But if I'm getting close to contention, I don't like to talk a whole lot. I'll usually go by myself a little bit and just be in my own head and just grind. So I did notice that we weren't in school together, but when I played the final round with Taylor Gooch in Mykova at the end of last year, we're good friends because we both went to Oklahoma State, and his caddy Mel is a good guy. I just noticed the first few holes, we were just talking a lot, and Taylor and Mel, they like to talk a lot. And I just had to, you know, just kind of walk a little off to the side and kind of just be by myself a little bit, because I felt like I could focus a little bit better doing that instead of, you know, talking a lot about other things. It just kind of gets me out of that mindset. So, I think that little things like that are stuff that you're still trying to figure out. You know, it's all about kind of learning yourself better, under what circumstances do you perform better, what circumstances do you perform worse in, and kind of just learning from that. And I just feel comfortable, you know, when I'm in my own head and I can just kind of grind the whole way.
Yeah, but like I say, it can vary almost through the tournament.
Yeah.
Thursday, yeah. Chatty. Friday, less chatty. Saturday, nobody talks like, to you Sunday.
Up. Yeah, I'm going to win.
Just talk to the hand.
Yeah.
I'm in win mode. On a follow-up question to that, do you prefer, let's say you're in the hunt, let's say you get final day, you're in the hunt, do you prefer to be in last group? Do you prefer to be leading going in, or do you prefer to be a little bit back, kind of chasing? Have you noticed any preferences there?
I don't think I have a big enough sample size to kind of really know for sure. I think if I'm starting the same amount of strokes behind, so it doesn't matter if I'm, you know, it's not like I'm one shot behind in the last group and then two shots behind in the second to last group. Just one stroke behind in each group. I would think I would almost prefer being in the group in front, just to kind of separate myself in, I feel like I would be ahead, and then if I make a bunch of birdies, that would get into the heads of the guys behind me more so if I played with them, and I feel like it'd be harder for me to make all those birdies if I'm in the last group. I don't know, it's kind of a weird situation, but there's something about just kind of being separated from the last group and you're making a bunch of birdies, and you feel like you're kind of a lone man versus the last group instead of just being entrenched in the last group, if that makes any sense.
Well, certainly your most recent win in Dubai, you were, what, two or three groups? Even more? How far off were you from the final group?
Yeah, I must have been maybe third or fourth group from the last group.
And you had a screaming Sunday. I managed to get in the playoff against Richard Bland and obviously then won the playoff. But, you know, that's probably a very good case study, as you say, when you're saying about being behind and making a bunch of birdies. And it forces those guys at the top of the leaderboard to think, oh, God, Victor's making a charge. Yeah. Like, he's getting up there. Yeah. He's making all these birdies. And you've got to put yourself in a position.
You kind of want both, I guess. You want to kind of get to that point, like Tiger in his day. We've got the reputation where people know if you're leading, or like Victor's lead, it's going to be hard to chase him. Or like if you're a few behind, they start quaking, like, oh, Victor's behind us, he's coming for us.
This is a question I've always wanted to ask a tour pro, and you have obviously had incredible recent success, so I reckon you'll give us a really good representation now. What happens when you win? So you've won a tournament. Explain to me what actually happens. Like, who's the first person you message? How busy is your phone when you pick it up, like, after the round? Like, what actually happens? I'd love to know that.
Yeah, it's a bunch of tedious stuff that you have to deal with, but obviously it's a lot better when you've just won, and it makes it a lot easier to do. If we take Dubai, for example, I finish up on the 18th green, cameras first come in, and you have an interview right there and then, which you guys see.
I saw that one, because that's Richard Bland's coach, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And you very nicely apologized for beating Richard. And
that was a tough spot for him. I fell for him, but but that's the first thing that happens, and then you kind of go behind kind of where we sign the scorecards and stuff, and there's a little room. Sign a bunch of flags, take a bunch of pictures.
How many flags do you sign straight away, for example?
Probably a couple hundred flags.
A couple hundred?
This is straight away.
Maybe not straight away. It's first all the pictures and stuff with the guys from the tournament, all the sponsors. And then I gave a little speech when I got the trophy. I just talked to some more people. And then we went and did all the signing stuff. It was a lot of back and forth, and might have been slightly intoxicated. So I don't remember every single step of the way. But it was a lot of back and forth, a lot of pictures.
How long between holing the last putt on the last green in the playoff, how long in time was it from that to the first beer that you had?
I think we started off with champagne.
Nice.
That Sunday, but it probably took me a good 3 hours before I was back to my hotel, and I properly celebrated with some of my friends and had a nice late dinner. So it was a long time on the golf course, but easy stuff.
So you pick your phone up, you've just won. Like who are you expecting on there? I'm guessing. Do you see text messages and WhatsApps from everybody? Like everybody you've ever met is there on? Yeah, you know, who's got your number?
There's a lot of notifications on there. That's for sure. It's a little. I mean, obviously my mistake, but you know when you get notifications on Snapchat, Instagram, Messenger, Facebook, and obviously text messages, it's a little tough because sometimes all the people that I know or some people that I don't know well have obviously a way to reach me, and that pops up as a notification. But you know, if I want to talk to my mom and dad, it's kind of hard for me to go through all those notifications to find that. So it just like it's just a mess in there, and it kind of takes me a while to go through all the messages and stuff. But I try to at least text my mom and dad as soon as possible when I get the chance and have a quiet moment.
So is it like the next day when you sat there just going through them all, like reading all these text messages off everybody and replying to some of them, etc.?
Yeah, pretty much. The next day I flew direct from Dubai to Dallas. So I had a good 15 hours to run through some messages. So that was it worked out well.
And how hungover were you?
It wasn't too bad. It wasn't okay. Too bad.
Okay, you're getting
used. I know when to stop.
Getting used to the champagne and winning. I've always kind of wanted to know that side of it, because I always think as soon as it happens, like, again, you don't have to answer this question. When's like the money going to your bank account? Like, how quick is that, or is that a long process?
I don't really know, but I don't know if it's different from the DP World Tour or the PGA Tour, but I think it's usually maybe the Wednesday after.
Oh really? It's quite soon.
Yeah, it's pretty quick. So,
This is the kind of thing what we were talking on the last podcast, Victor, about this Drive to Survive Formula One series and how it's showing you all the insights. Obviously, this year it's going to be on the PGA Tour. This is the exact kind of thing as like golf fans that we don't see. And it sounds to you, it's obviously things just like administration things, but like to the average fan, it's like you want to see what actually happens, don't you? Exactly. Like when the golf cameras kind of get turned off.
I know the DP World Tour have done it a little bit more recently where they'll mic you up, right? When you're doing all the presentations and we get a glimpse of you speaking to like Keith Pelly or some of the marshals or some of the volunteers. And I can't get enough of it. So I just think it's fascinating. Mm. It's all the things you don't normally see. And do you enjoy, obviously you've just won, that's what you're out there to do. You're out there to win. Do you enjoy all the media side of it? Do you enjoy all the interviews? I know obviously we're doing a kind of podcast interview now, so hopefully you don't say you don't not enjoy
absolutely
it.
Absolutely hate it.
But like, do you enjoy even doing the speeches? Are you quite used to that now? Like, is that natural to you?
It's definitely not natural, but it's something that I've gotten a lot better at. Because I'm an only child, and I grew up in Norway, and especially in the winter, like you don't see a lot of people. I would go to class, I would go and practice indoors for a couple hours, and then I'm just home and I'm in the house for, 6 hours every evening, and then just chill and wait to get ready for school the next morning. So like you're very protected in a way. So for me coming to Oklahoma State into college, and you meet a bunch of donors, you meet people that are well connected, and you have to actually be able to talk to people and be able to represent yourself in a certain way. So that kind of got me out of my comfort zone a little bit. And it's like that do get easier over time, but it's interviews and kind of speeches and stuff that it's not something that I'm longing for or something that I absolutely need in my life. Now, interviews like these are fine. I enjoy them more because, you know, we don't have, obviously it's a longer form. We can actually go into stuff on a more detailed in more detail, and we can frankly just talk about anything. So I enjoy that a lot more than just kind of, oh, how did you feel about your round today? Or, wow, that was a nice eagle there. You know, talk about the chip in or whatever. You know, it just becomes pretty standard. So I enjoy these forms a little bit more, but usually all this stuff is a bit tedious.
Sorry.
Another one then, from obviously you won the US Amateur, which is, it is the biggest amateur event in the world, isn't it? I think that and the British Amateur, you'd consider the biggest. And what's interesting is when you look at that list of US Amateur and British Amateur winners, obviously some of those go on to be super successful and household names. But some of them, certainly some of the runner-ups as well, you don't then see go on and really push. But obviously they're elite amateur golfers. They wouldn't be getting to that position in those tournaments if they weren't, or winning, obviously. But what is that kind of, it's very hard to say, what are those kind of top things that some of these guys maybe then don't possess? Is it more just adapting to the lifestyle? Is it the fact that when you're playing for hard cash, it actually makes you feel so much more nervous? What are those things that stop some of these elite golfers going on to be elite professionals?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I guess that's maybe the million-dollar questions that we all ask ourselves. You know, in college, do we have what it takes to get to the next level? I would say maybe to the example of the USAM, you can. I just think with it being match play, there's a lot of variance in the tournament. Obviously, you're playing a lot of rounds, so it makes it harder to get further. But I just think with it being match play, you can maybe play some easier guys than other guys play against, and you might see some guys that, you know, are ranked 1,000 in the world. And win the event or finish runner-up, and yeah, you've had a great week, but is your overall consistency level good enough to take your game to the next level? Because I would say that's a cool thing about me kind of coming over to Oklahoma State to play college golf. You know, I had heard of, you know, 30 guys in Europe in junior golf, that you would think, okay, these guys are the best 30 kids in Europe, and I know everything about them. But when you get to the States and suddenly we're qualifying for the team, I mean, even the 7th and 8th and 9th guy on the team could, you know, tee it up anywhere and play well. And you've never heard of these guys. So I think the top level for all these amateurs, you know, you could be ranked 900th on the world amateur golf rankings and you could still have a really, really good top level. But it's just about that consistency. And that could be a lot of things. You know, some guys just don't hit it far enough and they get a lot out of their games. So in amateur golf, you can succeed at a very high level because you know how to think around the golf courses. You know how you play the golf courses really well. And you can maybe cash in a bunch of top 10s, but you don't quite get those wins to prove that you're ready for the next level. And then maybe you have some guys that are freaky talented and they have a really high, you know, top level, but they have some misses here and there that are just not too playable at certain courses. And when you're playing against the best player in the world, you can't really afford to waste too many shots. So I think it's an interesting question. And I think it's all very individual. You know, there's always a story behind a guy that, you know, let's say maybe finished second at the USAM or won the USAM and they're not longer playing professional golf. There's always, you know, maybe one thing here and there that the guy regrets doing or something happened in his life. And yeah, it's an interesting topic.
Of course it is, because it could even, as you mentioned there, you talked about a lot of the actual limitations out on the golf course.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
But it might just be personality traits. Mm-hmm. Like they might not like to travel, or they might not have the funding, or they might not have the support from family members or friends, like, or they might get injured. Like there are actually so many things that could stop this. Mm-hmm. Guy's just got the list of like US amateur winners. And it's like, there are scattered names that you obviously recognize, but quite a lot of names that you don't see again.
Well, it's a bit like looking at the silver medal as well at the Open. You know, some of those guys like a Rory go on to obviously be Rory, and other guys don't quite, you know, excel, but you think they've obviously played an amazing style in front of a packed out crowd at the Open Championships. They've got the game to some degree, but it's just fascinating, because I think why I get so kind of fascinated by this is like, I'm not a great golfer at all. As a junior, I was like a 4 handicapper, which at my club was quite good. And then you get the guys that around me then played for the county who were much, much better. Then the guys that get in the England set up who were obviously better again. And then it keeps going and going and going, doesn't it? And it gets to a point where it's like, how good do you actually have to be to be a professional golfer on the PGA Tour? And the answer is very, very good.
Very good and very consistently good as well. Like, you know, it's huge. I mean, do you think that's one of the best things that you kind of did in your career path? Obviously, I do want to dive into a little bit about your kind of upbringing in a moment, obviously being from Norway and the limitations you potentially had there. Do you think that's one of your best decisions when you moved over to Oklahoma State? Did that really kind of open your eyes to the possibilities of who you're competing against, but also drive you forward more to push yourself harder?
Yeah, no, I always knew I was going to go to college because our winners and you know, Norway is not the best setup for golf. So for me to kind of go to the States and I get an extra, in theory, 4 years to hone my game and get ready for professional golf, that was a no-brainer for me, because I had a couple of friends that would turn pro out of high school and they would play the Nordic League or some mini tours in Scandinavia to try to kind of get through the ranks in Europe that way. But I just knew I wasn't ready, both from a golfing standpoint, but also a personality standpoint. I had a lot to learn, and I had a lot of growing up to do. And I think, just circling back to what you said earlier about it being a personality trait as well, I think that's one of the biggest things, because there are so many guys that can play golf at the highest level. But I think, I've always been a little introverted. So when I come to a new place that I just don't know anything about, I tend to be a little quiet. I don't take up a whole lot of room, and it takes me a little bit of time to get adjusted. But I would say I'm also very good at adjusting. So if you put me into a new environment, I'm eventually going to adapt to kind of my surroundings, and I'm going to figure out a way to make it work, essentially, to be able to perform. And I think that's been maybe my best attribute so far. I just look at kind of when I first turned pro, I probably had 10 miles an hour less ball speed when I first turned pro. And I also hit the ball really low. There were multiple shots around the greens that I couldn't hit, and I wasn't a very good green reader. Whereas now I've kind of, like, I found ways to adapt at every single part of my game. Like, I hit it higher now because the courses allow, or they expect you to come in with more spin and higher launch. so you can stop the balls on the greens, and you need to hit it further to play some of these courses that we're playing. So, but at the same time, just be calm when you're playing in front of so many people, and you have high pressure situations that you don't like. Yeah, it's okay to be nervous, but you get better every single time you're exposed to them. So I think that's kind of just one of the most important things that you learn from stuff, instead of, because I've seen people, you know, home same person, they never change. So I think that's interesting to just watch.
You just cut out briefly there, Victor, just on a little bit of signal, but I think we got the gist of what you were saying there. Because I think, so rewind back time, kind of, it's not super popular golf in Norway, is it? Am I right in saying that?
No, it's, you're right. It was, I mean, we've had a decent amount of people play, but you wouldn't hear too much on the news, or there weren't that many guys that would watch it Thursday through Sunday. Now, we had a little bit of an uptick with Henrik Bjørnstad playing the PGA Tour for a few years. So that was good for Norwegian golf. But then we kind of went on a little decline for the next decade or so. So, yeah, it's going a little bit up and down. But with Norway being a winter nation, and with the Winter Olympics going on, which we did pretty well in, it's we have just a little different focus. Golf is not the highest on the priority list, for sure.
So what was your winter sport playing growing up? What were you into?
I guess like every Norwegian get into just cross-country skiing. You're basically not a Norwegian if you don't know how to ski. So I did that for a little bit, but I never really liked it. Downhill skiing was a lot more fun, but it got to a point where, you know, I was maybe 11 or 12 years old, and I was less interested in going up and skiing the mountains in the weekend. Rather, I just want to be home and hit balls inside. That wasn't so fun to do for 4 months of the year, but I was just keen on playing golf than I was doing other winter sports. But I also played soccer or football, and I did also martial arts, so taekwondo, for a few years.
Oh, wow.
Well, is it true you're a black belt in taekwondo?
Yeah. That was a long time ago, but yep.
Because I saw that online. This is either true, which is unbelievable, or it's one of those really random like rumors that I didn't want to ask you, and then you go, no, that's absolute rubbish, what are you talking about? That's madness. So you must have been very skilled to get to black belt.
Yeah, no, it was, I thought it was pretty good, but then again, I went from like first grade to seventh grade. So I went for 7 years, but I was really, really young. So it's been a number of years since then. You know, I'm not as flexible as I was when I was in seventh grade and I could throw a bunch of kicks around, but it's good to have regardless.
It's more than anything, it's a good fact when somebody says, right, Victor, tell me a fun fact about you that nobody knows.
I can kick your ass.
Like, suddenly, I've got a black belt in taekwondo, no big deal. So if golf wasn't super popular in Norway, not the primary sport, as it's not most places, granted, and what got you into it? What motivated you to kind of grind and hit balls and practice and get better?
Yeah, well, my dad kind of first got me into the game. He actually worked in St. Louis, Missouri when I was really young and picked up the game there and brought a golf set back to Norway when I was probably about 3 or 4 years old. So I was really, really young. And there's actually a big, big field maybe 5 minutes away from my house, walking distance. And I got a lot of people play football or go for runs, walks. It's just a big field, and I would bring some balls out, and we would kind of hit my first shots out there. As I said, I also did football and taekwondo. So up until when I got to 11 or 12, that's kind of when I wanted to practice golf in the winters and take it a bit more seriously. But I just – it got to a certain point where, you know – I just really got bitten by the bug, and when I got a little bit better, I could actually hit decent shots. You know, I could get the ball airborne, and the ball started traveling further and further, and it just becomes really, really addictive.
So who was like, were you watching the golf on the TV? Were you watching stuff online? What was there anything in there that kind of really, like obviously Tiger, I'm guessing, was influenced as it is for most of us. Mm. Was there any other kind of influences at that point?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up watching the European Tour. Just Thursday through Sunday, I would wake up first thing in the morning, just turn it on the TV and you know, watch them play in South Africa or France or wherever it was. And so obviously getting a lot of a golf through that way, but also like when I got to high school and I would sit on the computer, even in the classroom, and just watch highlights of Tiger Woods and just get goosebumps every time I was watching him make a putt or hit a shot from the rough or slice it, you know, around the trees. It was just the charisma that he had and the way he kind of pulled off those shots that it was pretty awe-inspiring and just kind of wanted to get better and see if I could do somewhat similar things to what he was doing.
That's amazing. So I'm guessing when you go back to Norway now, you kind of like, you must be like royalty. Like, you know, you've got this kind of number four golfer in the world currently. You've won six times on the tour. I mean, you must be going back there. And how often do you go back? But are you welcomed? Are you treated differently? Are you going to get knighted? Are you going to become the king of Norway? Like, how does that pathway look?
Yes, yes, and yes. No, I'm just kidding. I go home a couple times a year. So usually I go home for every winter break for Christmas time and stuff. And I hadn't been home in a couple years in the summer, which I did go home last summer. And that was a bit weird because I hadn't played golf in Norway for a couple years. And we have this website called Golf Box where you just register your golf rounds before, you know, if you're going to go play somewhere. And I had a few friends in the night before, you know, 10 o'clock tee time the next day. And when we show up, there's like 200 people on the first hole. And so that was a bit strange. I did not really anticipate that because at the time I hadn't been home in a couple of years in the summer. But I guess it's been, I guess a lot of people in Norway have kind of started to watch golf in the weekends. And I would go like to a gas station and just get some snacks. And the guy would say, "Hey, are you Victor?" And I would just kind of make small talk and just say, ask, "Hey, yeah, cool. Do you play golf or anything?" He said, "No, I've never tried, but I've been watching every." It's like, it kind of, yeah, it's just a bit weird getting recognized at home, and especially from people that aren't even golfers.
Yeah.
You know, one thing is, you know, is getting recognized on the golf course. That's, you know, kind of my working place, but, getting recognized outside of that is pretty weird, but, it's cool to see that more people are starting to play golf back home and starting to get kind of more acclimated to the game and see how great of a game it is.
You must be really proud of that. You know, obviously, it sounds like you've had a huge influence on these golfers, new golfers coming to the game in Norway. I mean, that must be something you're going to look back on in from now and many years to go and go, I've managed to influence that, and I've brought this new breed of Norwegian golfers out. I mean, that must be incredible.
Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous because I mean, I'm still trying to figure things out. I've only been a pro for 2.5 years, so it kind of makes me feel really, really old in a way. You know, that they're kids already, they're looking up to me and trying to pursue the game of golf. And also, I live in Stillwater, Oklahoma. It's a college town, so I'm hanging out with a bunch of college kids that are on the golf team, and we play every single day. So yeah, it's just a good way for me to feel really old, I guess. But no, it's cool. Obviously, I just try to focus on what I need to do to get better. But at the same time, if other kids can, if or people in general can, you know, they like what I'm doing and and they find motivation in that. That's pretty cool.
I can just picture it now, a load of Norwegian kids double pumping the backswing.
That'd probably be one of my advices to not try to replicate.
could you imagine in the future, like Hovland Schools of Golf over there? Is that something in the pipeline? Is there anything that you're interested in?
It's definitely not in the works as of right now, but that'd be really cool to give something back, something like that. Maybe a few projects or academy or I don't know. Those are cool ideas, but I think that will be a little bit in the distant future.
Speaking of the future, then, as an elite athlete, you know, you have to be so much in the moment, focused kind of day to day and, you know, one shot at a time. I know it's a cliche, but on the golf course, you can't like let yourself get beyond the moment you're in. But are you a golfer who has dreams of winning X amount of majors, X amount of tournaments? Is that something, or is there athletes out there that you want to, you know, there's always that story of Tiger used to just be obsessed with beating Jack and he'd have posts on the wall and that was his mission. Are you kind of like that with anybody, or do you have an amount of like majors you want to win, or how do you see that, or is it just one tournament at a time?
Yeah, it sounds boring, but it's just kind of one tournament at a time. Yes, the majors are elevated and they certainly are the biggest tournaments in golf. But I almost find that mindset to be a little counterintuitive if you go into a week and just thinking, okay, this is actually like one of the most important weeks of the year, and you almost not psych yourself out, but it's still the same game that I did. Like, for example, if I played the week before and I played well, I just keep doing that, and then hopefully I'm in contention and can pick one off. You know, it's instead of trying to put too much pressure on yourself. And for me, it's more like, yes, I'd like to win a major, but I think it's really cool that, like just kind of looking at my resume already, if you will, that I've won 6 times and they've all been, you know, in different parts of the world. I haven't won one on U.S. soil yet, which I want to change, but I think it's cool that I have a win in Germany, in Dubai, in Puerto Rico, Mexico. I think it's just cool to, you know, kind of put your name on different trophies and all over the world instead of just kind of playing the same events every single year. And, you know, So you're just like not just going through the motions every single year, but you mix it up and, hey, I want to go to Asia and I want to try to win there, or I want to go to South America and try to play there.
I guess that keeps it fresh as well for you, doesn't it? It keeps it exciting for you going to different places, seeing different places, different courses. You know, that should keep you excited as well, I guess.
Of course. The one thing I've heard from a few players now, not a lot, it's a big exaggeration, but a few players, that they're more trying to control their own controllables now. So they're trying to control on the things that they can improve on. So very small, gradual steps to improve the putting, improve the chipping, improve the driving. And those changes will lead to more results, will lead to more trophies. Instead of saying, looking at goals that are almost externally, which you can't always control, can you? You can control what you're good at and what you're bad at and what you need to improve on. So is there anything kind of in the next 6 months or so, or even the next month, I guess, that are your weaknesses that you are trying to really improve on?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very interesting thing. And again, it sounds boring to say that because there's so many things in golf, especially in golf, that you can't control. So if you can just take care of what you can control and do that to the best of your abilities, then you just let that play out. And over 100 times or however many times, you're going to become more successful if you improve at something. It's a little bit like poker. I'm pretty interested in poker, and you can get it in aces versus kings, and you might lose 3 times in a row, even though, I mean, you're a heavy, heavy favorite, so you would want that spot every single time you have the chance. But just because you lost 3 times in a row doesn't mean that you played it poorly. So I think there's a lot of that to golf. You can hit a good shot and maybe the wind is a little off when you try to hit it, and the iron shot, instead of being stuffed, it you know, just goes barely over the green. Now you're short-sighted and making bogey. And obviously you want to try to learn from that, but there's some times where you're going to do the best you can and you're going to actually pull off the shot, but it doesn't quite work out that way. So I think, and kind of just alluding to what I said earlier, you kind of have to take your emotions out of the tournament in a sense, or take the emotions out of the process of preparing for a shot, because you kind of look at it in a vacuum. You just, okay, this is the right club, this is the right play, and then you just step up and try to execute.
That's a good point.
I think what's weird, like as a when you're watching golf as a kind of as a fan or whatever, we get so much kind of noise around the majors, around the Open, around the Masters, certainly the television channels saying like the Masters are in only 7 days or 10 days or whatever. And so was it such a big thing? And obviously it's the players, but you kind of almost expect the players to have that mindset going in, but they almost can't, like you said, no. Because if you went into the Masters thinking, oh my God, this is it, this is the Masters, this is my chance at the green jacket, that's not the right mindset, surely. You're not going to perform if you have that mindset.
Yeah, it's very interesting, which but at the same time, it might be different from other people, because yeah. I heard Brooks Koepka, for example, would say, oh, this is a major, I'm going to basically win this week. He puts a lot of added pressure on himself by saying those things. But at the same time, he does really, really well in the majors. So for him, that might be a way of just really getting focused, I guess. And it brings the best out of his game. But for other people, that might be a little different. I remember when... and you said you had Bryson on your show. I don't know if he talked about that, but when he would say, for example, at Augusta, that it's a par with 67 or something for him. Yeah. I mean, it's like you're kind of putting a lot of pressure on yourself, sure, to shoot 67 or lower. And I think he also said that after the fact that, you know, he put a little too much pressure on himself and he felt it. And it's just not a good place to be in to perform your best, I feel like. So instead of not even saying those things publicly, but to yourself, I've even noticed too, if I'm playing really, really well and I'm striping it and I'm making a lot of putts, I'm just like, okay, this game is easy. Where, you know, what's the course record? Let's do it. But then, as I said, you quickly get pretty back quality once you hit a pretty decent 4-iron or something, and you get the wind wrong or a bad bounce, and then suddenly now you're plugged in the lip of the bunker and you're making a bogey or double. That quickly gets you back to normal in a little bit. So it's important to not let your mind wander too much and just kind of stick to the processes.
The amount of times I've birded the first hole and gone straight online to check what the course record is and then make double up the next. It's happened so many times. We've gone very, very golf heavy today, Victor. And even though it's a golf podcast, we don't normally go super, super golf heavy. Like, what else do you do? What do you do to like relax? You mentioned poker a minute ago. Is there any other things that you do and you love to do?
Yeah, I mean, my days are kind of boring, to be honest with you. Usually at a tournament week, for example, I don't get a whole lot of time. I like to practice. I like to prepare. I like to spend time on the golf course. I usually try to get some kind of workout in. And then at the end of the day, I'm kind of tired. So I'll listen to music. I'll try to watch some poker videos, or I'll try to play some poker myself. Or I really like to listen to music, specifically the metal stuff.
Heavy metal.
and then I just kind of FaceTime my buddies and just kind of keep in touch with what's going on. I don't really do a lot, but I either work pretty hard or I don't do anything at all. That's kind of what my daily routine is about.
In the last 12 months or so, there's definitely been a shift in your body shape. Like, you've definitely bulked up. I'm guessing that's an effort to create more clubhead speed. Is it something you enjoy doing? Have you had to force yourself to do it? Do you enjoy doing it now? And was it effectively to get more ball speed, or was it to pick up some more ladies, or was it to look better in a golf shirt? Like, what was the motivation?
Yeah, I would say the motivation was multifaceted. It wasn't just
good answer.
But, No, it's definitely there's. I mean, it's just kind of general health for most of it. You know, you just you feel better, and obviously I can do what I'm doing for a longer time if I take care of my body and I stay on top of it. But also just, you know, the body feels better on a day-to-day basis. You get more confidence because it feels better. And obviously it's helped me hit a little bit further. I do kind of enjoy it, at the same time. I do some weightlifting. Other times I just do like cardio just to get up my heart rate up a little bit. So it's been a combination of, you know, yes, golf specific stuff, but at the same time I do a lot just for general health. But it's also been a little interesting too that I've been trying to learn more about because, you know, lifting weights, because obviously you have to stimulate your muscles to get bigger. You also get pretty tired, so knowing the time and kind of how to do it and when to do it. Yeah, it's just because I'm a pretty motivated person, so for me to wake up every day, you know, I want to get a hard workout in, I want to get some cardio in, I want to hit balls, I want to work on my putting, I want to play nine holes, I want to work on my chipping, and you just kind of map that out throughout the day. Yeah, you do one day of all that stuff. But the next day you're going to be so tired and you might go through the motions, but you're not getting any good practice in. That's been like a tough thing for me to handle, is that, okay, I want to get strong and I want to work out hard, because if I go to the gym and I don't work out hard, it feels like I'm not doing anything. But at the same time, knowing that that's going to affect my cognitive abilities the rest of the day, but also abilities. I'm not going to be able to do a speed session later in the day, for example, because my muscles are already just fried. So kind of knowing how to listen to your body and scheduling things, you know, work out here, okay, maybe a speed session 2 days after that workout, and just little things like that I find very interesting, because I really enjoy the process, and I'm all about just tweaking my daily routines so that I edge, I optimize my day a little bit better. So in the long run, I'm going to improve at a way faster rate.
The vibe I'm getting, Victor, is this success hasn't happened by accident.
It's not overnight.
I'm getting this vibe that you're a pretty clever fella and you're very switched on and you seem incredibly mature. And like everything you've said today has had reasoning, and it's very understandable, and it's measured, and it's calculated, and it's all pointing to become the better version of yourself, not just on the golf course, but just of yourself in general, which I think needs to be really kind of praised, really. You know,
100%.
It makes me feel very old, very fat, very lack of talent.
So after this podcast, I'm going to the gym. I know. I'm going to hit 50 balls, I'm going to eat just less, and I'm going to be the next Victor Hovland.
And I'm going to Oklahoma State. Right, we've got some quick fire questions.
I'll tell you what, we've got some questions from the audience, Victor, but I'll be honest with you, I don't think this is a compliment to your interviewing, Rick, but we've actually asked so many of these. So many people wanted to say about your goals for the future, which we've kind of come to the conclusion of, you're going to win more events, we know that, but you're just going to do it tournament by tournament. There was a question actually, which I won't understand this at all, but what's your favorite Metallica album was one of the questions.
Okay. I don't listen to too much Metallica, to be honest.
Is that a bit too mainstream?
Well, it was kind of Metallica is great, and it was kind of one of my first kind of gateway bands to kind of delve into some harder stuff, but I'm not a super big fan of their later albums. So I would say just anything of their, you know, maybe first three or four albums, I would say, or you know, my more favorites.
I'm gonna sound like a proper old man now. The old sound, the bloody same. All these.
Well, I don't want to flex too hard. But when I was in year six at school, and I was 11, so what's that, 20 years ago? I'd actually have a Linkin Park album, so it was.
Yes.
Is it Hybrid Theory or something like that it was called?
I feel like Linkin Park's very mainstream, though.
It is very mainstream, but that's as far as I went.
But that was, I mean, I've always liked Linkin Park. That I kind of grew up with that, but I didn't think much of it.
I couldn't even think of some songs.
And then I just kind of, again, got on YouTube and just searched on, okay, best metal songs. And I just kind of went in from there. But yeah, Linkin Park and kind of Metallica were some of the bands that kind of got me into this stuff early on.
Right, I'm going to fire through some of these. Kurt Morse has asked, what's his standard Chipotle order?
I don't eat it too much anymore. I used to a lot in school.
I don't feel we're back. We don't have it over in the UK, do we?
I don't think so.
No.
We're more Five Shame. Guys, McDonald's. Really into, I'm really enjoying Five Guys at the moment.
Five Guys.
Five Guys, this is good.
Philippe has said, what's your favorite golf club in the bag right now?
It's a good question. I've actually got some new stuff in my bag right now, so it's a little bit exciting trying some new clubs.
Is this stuff you can talk about, though? Is this clubs that are released yet? You can tell us what they are or the under wraps.
They are released.
Okay, and, so what have you got in the bag right now, then, that you're trying?
So I actually, but I actually put in a Callaway 60 degree last week. Mm-hmm. And I just found it, I think it was just mostly the grind that was different. But I just noticed I've had a really hard time in the bunkers these last few weeks, because some of these courses, especially on the West Coast, like the greens have been really firm. And I've just noticed I've put myself in short-sided positions, and I haven't, like, I can't put any spin on the ball compared to what some of the other guys are doing. I'm just looking at it. Well, I mean, my hands aren't that bad. Like, my technique isn't that bad. And even my coach Smith has been looking at it. It's like, yeah, it looks fine. I don't know why the ball is coming out so low with little spin. And then I tried this Callaway wedge, and I guess it was just, it prevented it from digging as much and kind of just popped the ball a little higher. So I got higher launch and more spin, which is huge for me when I've been short-sighted, because I feel like I'm getting a lot better on the standard chip shots, but it's the short-sighted ones from the bunker or from the rough where I could root from some more height and more spin. So I think, honestly, my 60 degree is kind of what I'm most excited about right now, just going out of there and chip all day.
Yes.
We won't tell Ping about this, right?
Well, if you ever want
to... We got something in the works, so yeah. Might put another 60 degree ping in the bag soon.
If you ever want even more loft, Rick bought a club off Facebook Marketplace, was it a while ago? Yeah. It was a 70 degree wedge, and it was so much fun.
I'll send it to you. You can bring it out on tour. Dan Tudor has asked, does he know Ole Gunnar Solskjaer personally?
I do not. No. I do not.
That's
just
like
a fan.
That's like people asking us, do we know the Queen personally?
Did you know James Bond?
This is an interesting one, and I've seen a few of these. So James Little has said, does he have a standard? Oh, no, this is a different question. James Little has asked, do you have a standard swing thought?
I wouldn't say I have a standard swing thought, but it's always, you know, if I'm trying to do something, there's a couple of things that I change. And there's really not much to do with swing mechanics. It's more setup. Like, I try to do almost everything in my setup because my swing is so instinctual and reactionary at this point. So I try to control as few variables as possible. So for me, a tendency has been in the last few months to aim too far right. So for me, if I'm trying to, I've really had a hard time hitting my cut. I've kind of gravitated towards being more of a drawer of the ball right now, which I like in some circumstances, but I still see the golf course with a little bit of a cut. So for me, just last week, I was just really getting into aiming more square and even more left with the iron shots to get that cut swing in there. And ball position for me usually stays the same. Sometimes if I try to hit a low and maybe more draw it, I put the ball more back in the stands. But usually, like, I kind of keep it more up to the left foot, and I just try to be really cognizant of where I'm aiming with my shoulders and my feet. And then it's more just, okay, if I'm feeling a little cut shot, then I just kind of hold on to the face a little bit more through impact, and I try to swing more down my kind of where my foot line is. And if I'm hitting a draw, it's more, okay, stand close, and then just kind of hit down my foot line as well. So I try to keep it as simple as possible.
I think you need to, don't you, at the highest level. Right, I'm going to wrap it up on this last question. And this is a really good one. And my mum will be glad I've asked this question.
Your mum will, okay.
But it's not from my mum.
Okay.
Okay.
I feel this is going then.
Andy Adams has asked, can you teach some of the other pros how to play with a smile on their faces? Because it's great seeing you smile so much when you're playing. And this was something my mum always had she loved Tiger. She's like, I wish he bloody smiled when he played.
Yeah.
All the time. But I must admit, watching you do actually look like you're genuinely having a good time out on the golf course.
Yes.
Yeah, I would say I do smile a lot, especially when I'm talking to some of the guys. We have some good banter going, but I think I just, like, as some people have a resting bitch face, I think I just have a little resting smiley face, in a sense. I think I do get credit for smiling, but sometimes I'm not, and I'm actually off. So I think that kind of runs in my favor a little bit.
That's a lot of
That's class.
Yeah, so if anybody's watching Victor play and he's smiling, he's not always happy.
Yeah.
Basically, is what we're getting at. Well, Victor, honestly, you have been an incredible guest.
Yes.
You are by far the highest world ranked player we've had on the channel. And I can't wait to see, after the lucky charm rub that you had last time from ninth to third, now fourth. I mean, it's only up from here.
Well,
if you're not world number one by the end of the year, we've not done our good luck charm justice, basically.
Well, that's it. We will be at the Open this year. I'm looking forward to it. So we'll see you there. You'll be playing. You'll hopefully be winning it. And I know you've put a lot of practice in, obviously, day to day. But just so you know, you've got my support as well. So everyone that's been on the podcast, we've got Tommy, we've got Bryson, we've got Victor, we've got Minwoo Lee. They're all my favourites. So you've got the practice. You're going to play well. But just know you've got our support as well. And that will be the final push to get you on that claret jug. With the
and I think if we get chance and our schedules collide, we'd love to shoot a video, a proper main channel video.
Be cool.
Where I played against Tommy and he gave me a 10 shot head start over 18 holes over a championship golf course that was about 7,500 yards. Everyone knows the result pretty much. It was a level match in the end. And I started 10,
really?
I started 10 under par. I know, I'm not that good. But he played well.
That's still pretty good.
He played okay for him. It was tough conditions. I played okay for me. So I reckon that was about the right benchmark. So I want to see if there's a tour pro out there who can beat me with a 10-shot head start. And I think you're the man.
Okay.
I think you're the man.
That's
so let's try and film that if we
concept.
Can. Victor, good luck for the rest of the year. Thank you very much for your time. Keep picking up those trophies. Keep picking up those checks. Keep smiling, and good luck for the rest of the
Yeah,
of
thanks
the
year, so much, buddy. Mate.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate
thanks,
it.
Victor.
It was a good time.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.